You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is only spring training, so you have to take game scores with a big, gigantic grain of salt. And that would apply to the Oakland Athletics. Let's talk to Jane Lee about that. I'm Allison Footer. Okay, Jane, most of the time I do not put any credence into spring training game scores, finals, lines, because so many of the guys that are going to be on that 25-man roster, we can't break, play a couple innings and they're out. Okay, but this is a football score. So Oakland 21, Arizona 13. What happened? What was going on there?
I mean, I couldn't really tell you because I only saw some of it. You know how spring training is, where
you're
kind of looking up from your computer every so often. And one of those times I did look up, I saw that the A's had scored 11 runs in the, I think it was the sixth inning. I mean, this is a game that Sonny Gray started. He gave up 7 runs, and the A's still won the game. The most incredible thing about it was the fact that there were only 2 home runs hit in the game. You know, you look at a score like that and you just assume that everyone went bonkers and everyone is hitting home runs, and there was only 1 from each team, which is pretty remarkable, but it does explain why the game lasted so long as well. Just one of those days, and I mean, even in the ninth inning, in the bottom of the ninth inning, the D-backs were still scoring. And you're looking up like, this is just never going to end. I mean, the temperature's dropping. You know, we've been watching this game forever. I think the sixth inning alone, when the A's scored 11 runs, spring training is different to where, as you know, when the starting pitcher's available in the clubhouse, you go down to the clubhouse and get him before he leaves because he's allowed to leave early. So you end up missing part of the game. And so Sonny Gray was made available in the sixth inning, and at Salt River Fields, where the Diamondbacks play, the walk to the clubhouse is pretty long. So we left the press box in the sixth inning, went to the clubhouse, talked to both Sonny Gray and Ryan Mastin, who made his debut yesterday. We were in there for at least 20, 25 minutes, made the walk back. I transcribed pretty much everything they said, looked up, and it was still a sixth inning. So
that is almost,
you know, and at this point, this is when they're scoring all their runs, and you know, I'm getting questions like, what's happening? How did they get all these runs? And I'm like, I couldn't even tell you. So just crazy, crazy. And the funny thing this morning, because the A's are playing Team Italy today, so their stats from today's game don't count because it's not considered Cactus League play. You know, so Bob Melvin was asking, you know, do these things count? And we said no. And he said, oh, good. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What do you have to worry about? Your team just scored 21 runs yesterday. And he was saying, you know, sometimes after that, there's a little bit of a hangover effect. But, yeah, it made for a very long day. But, I mean, one of those only in spring training type of things.
Yeah, 3 hours, 44 minutes.
Was that it?
Yeah, right. Well, I guess that's actually, I mean, that's a long game. But, yeah, you're right. It probably seemed like about 4.5 hours. It says 3:44 here, so on the box score. That had to have been that one inning where they scored 11 runs had to have been like an hour of it. So Sonny Gray gives up 7 runs in 2 innings, and nobody seems worried because you don't worry about that stuff at spring training. And I mean, you know, if it happened during the regular season, I don't think anybody would express worry at that time either, but he would be like really mad at himself. And, you know, there would be a little bit of concern, like, why is this happening? Often in my experience of like covering starting pitcher, like the Astros, I mean, if there's like an ace pitcher, he might just be working on a particular pitch and just throwing only that pitch, not really caring about what's happening with the batter. That stuff does happen. There is a pride factor where you don't want to go out there and just get it handed to you, but it does seem like everybody was pretty much felt like Sonny still looks good, even though the results weren't there.
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised going in and talking to Sonny. I assumed, I mean, he's so hard on himself. So I thought he would be kind of bummed out, you know, disappointed, maybe short with words. But, I mean, he was anything but. You know, he was, I think he was just very forthcoming in that, you know what, he didn't throw his slider his first game. So the second game, he wanted to throw a lot of them, and he wanted to work on it. A lot of those pitches were in the dirt. We saw there were 3 wild pitches And those alone led to a couple runs. So part of it was that there were also other things going on. I mean, you know, one of the pitches was supposed to go for a pickoff at first, and the batter basically went out, reached for it, and, you know, drove in a couple runs on a single that just went past the first baseman who was on first, ready for that pickoff throw. You know, a couple of those things happen, and it was just one of those snowball type of deals, you know, a home run. But you look at his stuff overall, and, I mean, he looked fine, and he feels great. And I think right now health is the most important thing for him, just because he really wasn't healthy, I don't think, at any point last year. He had something or another going on, it seemed like, throughout the entire season. So the fact that he's still feeling good, still feels healthy, you know, and that his slider was going in the dirt, I mean, part of it is it's just what it does. I mean, we're used to seeing that. I think a couple of years ago, he was near the top of the league in wild pitches because he has just such crazy movement on his pitches. And so part of that, you know, is going to be on the catcher, you know, being prepared for that. And part of it's on Sonny. He was saying, you know, I have to throw that pitch for a strike and a ball. You know, he's going to be throwing it for a ball, but he's still trying to get swings on it, of course. So it's going to happen. And usually with Sonny, he's able to prevent any damage that, you know, those wild pitches can cause. And sometimes, you know, it gets things going like the way things went yesterday. But for him, he's been so good that he's been able to kind of skirt that trouble while, you know, working around wild pitches like that. So all in all, I mean, Bob Melvin said he wasn't worried at all. He thought he looked way better than his final line showed. It was still just his second start, and his first start, he was really good. I think right now there's just such a big magnifying glass on him because of the way things went for him last year. And I think every start, no matter if it's good or bad, people are going to read a lot into it. You know, a week ago, the narrative was Sonny's back. And now, of course, people are like, oh, here we go again. And this is just going to continue every one of his starts. And then it's going to pick back up again once the regular season begins. You know, we're going to start this cycle over. So I think it's a little too early to be making any conclusions, which is why I keep going back to, you know, he's healthy. He feels good. He wasn't at all concerned about yesterday. I mean, he was working on things. That's what spring training's for. So I think they still feel very good about him going forward.
Yeah, that's good. Is there anybody else that's kind of stood out as you've been observing in camp? Maybe some young guys who have been impressive, not necessarily having to make the team this year, but anybody who's been impressive so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to talk about Matt Chapman right now. He's their big third base prospect that came in to his first big league camp last year and led the team in homers. I mean, this guy has crazy power. His batting practices are just an absolute spectacle. I mean, he's hitting balls farther than Chris Davis. I think people, you know, often say that they haven't seen batting practices like this in A's camp since Cespedes was around. And he's kind of picked up where he left off last spring. I believe he kind of bookmarked that 11-run inning yesterday. I think he had RBI hits, two RBI hits in the same inning. And then he was pulled from the game, and Bob Melvin joked afterward, you know, he was making everyone look bad. But it's just kind of, it's so much fun watching him, and it's fun to see new players come in, like Matt Joyce, and see him for the first time take BP, because it's just such amazing raw power. So he's been fun to watch again defensively. I mean, he was considered when he first got into the minors more defensively ahead. He has a really great throwing arm. So right now they're just kind of, you know, hoping he gets a little more experience at AAA to start the season. But if he starts out the season strong, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him sooner than later.
Nice. Always good to concentrate on some of those young guys, especially when your team is not expected to do a whole lot this season, but the future might look bright, so that's pretty good. Okay, Jane, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Get back to it, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you.
We're about halfway through spring training, and a lot of players from a lot of teams have headed out to join their World Baseball Classic teams, including some key Texas Rangers. Let's talk to T.R. Sullivan about that and more. I'm Allison Footer. T.R., let's just start with the World Baseball Classic. It's very cool. I see a lot of players that are from, like, the Dominican Republic and Venezuela.
that they're very excited to do this, to play for their country. There seems to be an air of excitement with every team. Have you noticed that with some of the Rangers players?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you talk to Jonathan McCroy, who's going to catch for the Team USA. I mean, he's just absolutely thrilled to play for his country. I mean, it's a big moment for him. Alex Claudio going to pitch for Puerto Rico. Great honor for that young kid who had a nice season last year. Adrian Beltre, I mean, he's been nursing a strained calf muscle, but he's been trying hard to get ready for the WBC. He really wants to play, really wants to be there. So he's headed off, and he's going to be there for the first round. So, yeah, just those three guys there alone, you can see how much this means to them.
Are there any concerns about Beltre? Have they told him anything about easing up, not putting, you know, too much pressure on his body during this tournament? Has he, you know, are the Rangers concerned?
Well, I mean, you got to be concerned. He's their best player, and he's 37, 38 years old. But, you know, he's got to get ready for the major league season somehow. And, you know, he's healthy, and I don't think Beltre would jeopardize his health for the WBC. He's either going to play for the Dominican Republic or he's going to play for the Rangers here in spring training. Obviously, the Rangers situation would be more controlled and far less intense. But still, I mean, the guy's got to get ready for the season, and this is as good as any.
Yeah, I think that maybe the chance of injury factor is a little bit overblown just because they're playing in all kinds of exhibition games anyway throughout spring training, regardless of the WBC. Okay, so let's move to the team's other news about the team. Yu Darvish, so he looks good, and this normally wouldn't be news, except I guess we really do have to make a note that the further he gets away from Tommy John surgery, the further he gets away from when he came back to pitch is a good thing. And I guess he's looking forward more than anything to just being a normal pitcher that nobody is really concerned about anymore in terms of health. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing that Darvish said yesterday was that he still felt some sensation in the elbow last year when he'd sit down in the dugout and have to go back out and pitch. He'd still feel it a little bit. And this spring, he hasn't felt anything. He feels great, and that's important for the Rangers. I mean, we all know that Darvish is a free agent after this season, and, you know, we all know it's going to take a hefty contract most likely to keep him. But I think the big thing the Rangers want to make sure is he's healthy. I mean, when he's healthy, he's an incredibly talented pitcher, but that's always a concern for anybody, and especially Darvish.
They can't really – they're beyond any kind of restrictions for him, right? I mean, it's not like they have to sort of guide him along like they did when he was coming back last year. I would think that this year would just be a more normal – maybe a more normal schedule for him.
Yeah, I think he should be full go. I mean, obviously, major league teams monitor their pitchers carefully no matter who they are. It'll especially be true with Darvish, and they'd like to see him cut down his number of pitches per inning. I think it was like 15.7 last year. We all know that 15 is kind of the cutoff point. I don't know if he can get it below 15, but they still would like for him to, you know, get more early contact and, you know, not worry about striking everybody out, which we know he can do in his sleep. So, yeah, they're going to monitor him a little bit, just like they would with anybody.
Yeah, I guess you have to, as long as he's going to keep going along. So I like this story that you wrote. I always love the human interest stories. And so Doug Bernier, who has been a baseball player for a very long time, but he is also has a hobby on the side, and he has a website, and you featured him on this. So he seems to be kind of an analytics nerd. Is that sort of what you learned from him?
I think he just loves baseball, and he loves teaching, and he loves learning about baseball, and it's just something that he kind of started, like you said, by accident. You know, he's one of those utility players who can play, like, the infield and the outfield, and he's even pitched a little bit, so he's had to learn, you know, a bunch of different positions and all the intricacies of that position. So now he just started taking notes, started writing it all down, and then he started putting it in his computer, and his wife said, hey, why don't you make a website? And he did. I mean, I've seen the website. It's obviously very, very impressive. A lot of great baseball instruction there from a lot of people, not just Doug, but you know, Garrett Richards is on there, Billy Wagner, your old pal, is on there, and Josh Donaldson, and a lot of impressive names have contributed videos and instruction texts, and it's a pretty good website to, you know, check out.
So it's called ProBaseballInsider.com. So when you mention like the Garrett Richards and Billy Wagner. So they're on video on the website, like giving instruction to a particular area of expertise.
Yeah, Bernie told me that one day, you know, in the off season, I don't know where they were, but Wagner just asked them to come out and help with a youth camp, and they went out there and started talking, and the next thing you know, there's Billy Wagner on the website talking about his long toss program. So, I mean, Doug's a great guy. He's very well respected in the game, and when a guy's played this long and keeps getting a job and a chance, you know he's well respected, and he just collects the information and collects the sources and puts it on the website. It's really a great website to visit.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, yeah, players are encouraged to look beyond their playing careers and figure out what they want to do. So maybe this is something that he's just going to, make into a living when he's done playing. So, okay, good stuff. TR, thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Brian McTaggart of MLB.com, joined by Jeff Blum, Astros now full-time announcer for Root Sports. I know you're excited about that. Big year for the Astros, of course. A lot of high expectations. Let's talk about the rotation a little bit. Everyone's talking about Keuchel and McCullers at the top. If they're healthy, do you think that's going to be the key to the season and they'll be able to allow them maybe to make a good push in the playoffs?
I think it all hinges on that. We know they're going to score runs with some of the acquisitions that they did make in the offseason, but I think that that starting rotation is the big key. Dallas Keuchel came off that Cy Young year, underperformed and got hurt, so it was kind of a double whammy and negatives for him, but he's looking to bounce back. Lance McCullers has a shoulder issue, correcting the mechanics a little bit. But again, it's health. You know as well as I do, you've covered the game a long time. If these guys can crank out 30 to 35 starts and go six innings every time out, this team is going to be extremely good.
And even if the pitching, I think, has areas where when it falls down and pitching comes and goes a little bit, this lineup is really deep. Just to give us an idea of when the guys they added and the depth of this lineup. Now, how dangerous is it when you have a 1-9 and there's no easy outs in this lineup?
Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing. I noticed it last year that when these guys would get past that five hole and you get past the Correa, it depended on if Gattis was hot or not. There were three or four guys in this lineup that you could actually chew through with runners on base and get out of the inning unscathed. But now I think you're going to find a lot more guys in that lineup that can make contact. There are going to be guys that are a little more picky in the zone, get on base. But when you add McCann, Beltran, Reddick, I mean, those are three potent bats and three quality guys to add into that clubhouse too.
Yeah, let's talk about those additions a little more. Already seen Beltran in the clubhouse. He's amazing around some of the young pitchers. Being a guy who's been a veteran and when you were coming up, what kind of impact can those guys have when you've been there, done that? Beltran's done everything there is in the game. Reddick's been around a long time. McCann's caught some Hall of Famers in his career. They bring a lot of experience.
Yeah, it's kind of unique. You've got Beltran, who's that Latin influence. I know AJ talked about that a lot over the last couple of years, bringing somebody in to mix in and not teach these guys how to play, but just how to enlighten them a little bit and give them a little more education on what it's about winning in a 162-game season. There's a lot going on. And the sage advice that Beltran's going to have, he's got the experience of being a top prospect, an all-star, potential MVP, playoff contender, so he brings a lot to the table along with the bat and the experience.
Finally, let's talk about the bullpen. I know there were they rolled through three closers last year, and I know the fans pulled their hair out when it came to the bullpen. Astros relievers led the majors in WAR. This is a very good bullpen. Do you think this will be the year that everyone settles in, Giles settles in, and it really becomes the lockdown bullpen that people expect?
I expect that, and I think AJ's in a unique position to have three guys that have closing experience with power arm and Ken Giles. And I think that year of experience here in Houston, the year of experience working with AJ and Brent Strom, is only going to make Ken Giles that much better. But I know these guys are excited seeing what the offense looks like, knowing that they'll have many more opportunities to go out there and close out these games.
Should be an exciting year. Yeah. Jeff Blum breaking it down. Thanks for your time.
Anytime.
Hi, I'm Brian McTaggart of MLB.com. We're joined by Todd Callis, the new television play-by-play voice for the Astros. And Todd, first of all, welcome to Houston and spring training. Just tell us about the move from a long time with the Tampa Bay Rays to the Astros.
Yeah, it's unusual to be with a team that long for 19 years and then join another team, Brian, but it's something that I'm very excited about. It was an opportunity that hasn't come across my table in a long time. I've looked at just a few play-by-play situations over the years, but I was very happy with the Rays. So when this happened, when Bill Brown retired, I knew it was a pretty good opportunity, and I was very fortunate to go through the process with Reed Ryan and others, and very happy to be in Houston.
Of course, you have some really deep Houston ties. Born in Houston, the same year the Astrodome opened, 1965. Sorry to give away your age. You've held up better than the Dome. But your dad was the first voice of the Astros in the Astrodome, Harry Callis. Just what are your memories of the early days in Houston?
I don't remember a whole lot. I do remember going to some games when we were little. My brother was also born in Houston. I was the older one. But moved when I was five. Astrodome does still have some memories, though. I remember the exploding scoreboard. I remember the cowboy guns shooting the bullets and the bulls and the snorting bulls and all that. But not a whole lot. I don't remember much about games or anything. I just kind of remember visuals like that.
And obviously Houston probably held a special place in your father's heart for you as well. Just the opportunity to come back, kind of come full circle, has to be really a neat deal for you.
It really is. And Dad's known more for being in Philadelphia, for being there 39 years. But the reality is his first major league gig was with the Houston Astros, 1965, and the year I was born. So there's a lot of great history there with me coming back to Houston, and I'm very excited to become a Houstonian for the first time since basically the early 70s. That'll be pretty cool.
Now, you were with the Rays for 19 years. Coming to a new team, what's the learning curve to get up to speed on all the players and the staff? And I mean, you have to go on the air and talk knowledgeably about the, and you do a good job at that. So how hard has that been?
Well, it's definitely the challenge. I want to know the history of the Astros like I knew the history of the Rays, but that's going to take time, and it'll probably be a year or two process. So I'm just kind of ramping up, taking one bite out of the elephant at a time. I know that when I walked into that clubhouse, there were not many guys that I knew really well. So it's just getting to know the guys, watching their games from the past years, knowing their tendencies, and really having Jeff Blum here and Julie Morales here really helps me out, because they've been around the team now for 4 or 5 years. So they can help me. But it seems like a great group. AJ Hinch has been phenomenal to work with early on. So I've really been diving into this in spring training. I look forward to continuing to do so.
Well, we look forward to the broadcast and having you in Houston for years to come. So that's Todd Callis. I'm Brian McTaggart, and back to you.
We are about halfway through spring training, and the Anaheim Angels are just humming along out there in Arizona. Let's talk to Maria Guardado about all of that, and she is brand new to this podcast. She's almost brand new to this beat. Maria, welcome to the weekly podcast, and I hope that everything is going well for you at spring training. Are you getting settled in a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you so much for having me on. You know, it's been a process trying to get to know everyone, but I think that slowly but surely that's happening. So, you know, I hope to continue to do that before the season starts.
Absolutely. So we're going to run through some headlines here, just some news that's been coming out of Angels camp. First of all, with Houston Street out for a while, so he was kind of the he was one of the options to be a closer. So now that he's not going to be starting the season, let's talk about the other options. So are they down to just a couple of guys now, and is that just going to be something that goes on probably for the rest of the spring, trying to figure out who's going to close?
Yeah, so heading into the spring, the Angels had really planned on having kind of a three-man competition for that closer job. It was going to be Street, Cam Bedrosian, and Andrew Bailey. And now with, you know, Street injured, it looks like it's probably going to come down to either Cam Bedrosian or Andrew Bailey. I think that Cam Bedrosian probably, you know, looks like the stronger candidate at this point. He had a really strong breakout year last season for the Angels and was great for them. He actually hasn't made a Cactus League appearance yet because he's been slowed by like an adductor issue, but he's probably going to get into the game sometime this week. So I think that the Angels are kind of looking forward to that. You know, Bailey, he pitched really well for the Angels after joining them in September, and then he actually ended up signing on as a free agent. So, you know, he's kind of like the dark horse, but he has a lot of experience and he's kind of a veteran arm. So, you know, I think that if Street is unavailable, it's probably Pedrosian's job. But, you know, we'll see. I guess things could change.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's, I guess, what you play these games for, even though it's tough to judge by spring training games. But it's the only thing they have to judge by. So we'll just keep watching on that. And the other thing I want to ask you about was Albert Pujols appears to be nearing game action. So anytime you're talking about Albert Pujols, that's big news. He's just kind of always working through some kind of physical issue, spring training. So how is he coming along?
Yeah, so he's just started. He's obviously coming off for surgery in December. So he's actually started running the bases, which was kind of a final step for him. And Mike Socha said today that he actually expects Pujols to get into a game on Friday. So, you know, the Angels have definitely been pleased with the kind of progress of his recovery, and they still won't, you know, aren't saying anything about whether he'll be they think he'll be ready for opening day, but I think his chances are looking pretty good at this point.
Okay, so is there been anything that has maybe impressed you so far? I know this is like your first spring training with the team. Richard Justice did a lot of these podcasts just over the off season when we were kind of in between reporters, and we were kind of marveling at the fact that the Angels are actually expected to win a lot more games than they won last year, and it's going to largely depend, of course, on the health of that starting pitching staff. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm selling them a little bit short. I just don't see the Fangraphs prediction of like 86 wins, but yes, you know, if you're talking about a team that's healthy, I mean, the Angels look pretty good. Is there anything that kind of stands out to you as somebody new to the beat who, seeing this team for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if everything breaks right for the Angels, I think they kind of have the potential to be kind of surprise contenders. I mean, they're obviously in a really competitive division, so that kind of, they have that going against them. But, you know, they have really great, they're set up to have really good defense this year. You know, they obviously traded for Danny Espinosa to fill their hole at second base. So he and Andrelton Simmons will obviously be, you know, one of the better double play combinations in the league. And their outfield is projected to be really great on defense as well. They have obviously Mike Trout in center and Cole Calhoun in right, and they traded for Cameron Maben, who's actually a center fielder, but now he's going to be playing left. So presumably he'll do well there. And they also added Martin Maldonado behind the plate, who's known to have a really strong arm and has a reputation as a really good pitch framer. So I think they're going to be good defensively, and they also have added a lot of speed with Maben and Ben Revere. So I think that in those two aspects of the game, they're probably going to be really strong.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how these guys start out the season. Because, yeah, when you run through the names like that, I'm like, okay, these are pretty good ball players. So we will see. So, okay, now my last topic is you. So you are new to this beat. So let's give me some of your background. Like, where were you before you took this job? Where are you from? Where did you go to school? Just give us the 411 on Maria.
Sure. So I am originally from the Bay Area, so I'm really excited to be back in California. I went to school at Yale, and the last 2 years I was with the Star Ledger New Jersey. In 2016, I was the beat writer for the Mets. So, it's kind of weird going from the National League to the American League, but, yeah, I'm excited about this opportunity.
That's really cool. I didn't know you were from California. So when you heard about this job opportunity, I guess that, that's a big jump to go from the East Coast to the West Coast, but I guess that was a welcome change for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I kind of always had an eye on coming back out to the West Coast ever since I graduated, but, you know, I was kind of just waiting for that opportunity to come up, and finally it did. So definitely really excited to be back home.
Awesome. Okay, well, good luck to you. Thank you for joining us. We'll be talking a lot this year, so we'll be getting to know each other. So enjoy the rest of the week in the spring, and we'll talk to you next time. We are about halfway through spring training, and the Mariners are just humming along there in their camp. I think literally humming. We're going to get to that in a second. But let's talk to Greg Johns first about some other things. I'm Allison Futter. Greg, what have you noticed? Anything stand out to you about what's been going on in Mariners camp? Somebody who's looked good, somebody who might not look so good. Just anything that we need to update on that front?
Yeah, I mean, they've been playing very well. I think coming out early, I think the guys that were going to the WBC came ready to go early, so a lot of their veterans were pushing hard early, and that, I think, kind of carried over to some guys. But I think pleasant surprises, Allison. I think things they needed to see. Daniel Vogelbach at first base has looked very good defensively, which was a big thing. He was a guy that they felt could hit, but they needed to see him, you know, get a little more flexible and agile around first base, and he's taken that, you know, really run with it. Last year, defensive shifts, they had trouble getting Adam Lind and Dejo Lee to get far off the bag when they're facing right-handers, and they've asked Vogelbach to get, and this guy's, you know, way further out into the hole than they had before, and, you know, balls hit to the ground on the left side, he puts his head down, busts his butt to first, turns around, throws coming, makes catch. I mean, they're really pleased with not only his agility, but his willingness to really extend himself a little further than some of the veterans they've had over there in the past. So that's been an interesting, and I think a kind of a subtle thing that we can watch going forward, Vogelbach defensively. Mitch Haniger been everything they had hoped out in right field. Now they're one of the young guys that they picked up over the offseason. I think he's been everything they had hoped, certainly. I don't know if that's a surprise or not, but certainly a needed thing to see. And, you know, some other guys popping up a little bit. Max Posey, young pitcher, has looked real good. Thiago Vieira, the hard-throwing rookie out of Brazil, has been a kind of a nice eye-opener. Just Guillermo Heredia playing very well out in the outfield, kind of a guy on the fringe. He looks like he could really help him coming over from Cuba last year and seems a lot more comfortable this year. So a lot of positives early, and they've been playing well on the field.
Yeah, as I've been traveling around, and because of my Astros background, a lot of people ask me, like, what do you think of the Astros' chances this year? And then I say, well, you know, they've got some pitching issues, but people think they're going to win the division. And then everyone says, you know, but the Mariners look pretty good. And I agree. And I feel like I say that every year. I'm always like, the Mariners are going to be a force to be reckoned with. I guess it kind of comes down to health, right? I mean, any team you talk to, they're like, well, we could be really good as long as we stay healthy. I mean, the front office puts together a team, you know, the contending front offices, they put together a team that they think are pretty good. But it really comes down to who comes out of spring training the healthiest in some ways to dictate with the beginning of the season, like how that's going to go.
Yeah, health and pitching, I always say. But, yeah, I mean, and I guess that's been a positive as well. Drew Smyly thrown very, very well, and he's, you know, could be a real key to that rotation that needs that depth. You know, I think their rotation looks real good if everything goes right, as maybe that's usually the case. But they've certainly got some guys. Yvonne Gallardo looked very good in his last start, another veteran that kind of some questions on him when they brought him in. Didn't pitch real well last year, but they think he can bounce back and have a nice year. Paxton certainly need a big year from him, and Felix and Iwakuma. You know, I mean, you got five pretty good starters and some other guys in the wing, so you're keeping those guys healthy and pitching well, I think they could do very well, but that always is a challenge, as we know.
So I was reading a nice article, I believe it was in the New York Times, Tyler Kepner, just talking about the Mariners and you know, just what Jerry Dipoto has done, and he's obviously made a ton of trades. And just when you think he's done, he makes a couple more. I think they actually made one after spring training had started. So, but one of the interesting points is that he's unafraid of a trade coming back to bite him. Like, he does not hesitate to do something that maybe in his gut he feels is like the right thing at that time, and ends up being maybe something that didn't help the Mariners. That's kind of an important thing. If you're gonna have a GM who's trying to shake things up without breaking everything down and starting over, he's trying to keep this team competitive while they have all these stars that are in the middle of big contracts. So that's kind of good, I guess, from a fan standpoint, that the GM is kind of unafraid in that way.
Yeah, I mean, you have to say he's unafraid. I mean, he's made, I think it's 41 trades in the 17 months since he took over. I mean, it's insane.
Wow.
More than anybody in Major League. So unafraid, yeah. I mean, as he says, surprisingly, it's hard to make trades. And I said, well, really, Jerry? It doesn't seem that hard for you. But it's hard to, you know, line up what you've got and find another GM willing to make that risk as well. I mean, GMs are human, and the last thing you want to do is trade a guy and you turn around and 3 years later and the guy's an all-star and you got nothing for it. And, you know, trading prospects, you know, guys usually oftentimes value their prospects more than other teams and are reluctant to move them. You know, the old bite you later thing is real. I mean, Jerry doesn't seem to worry too much about it. He says, yeah, sometimes we look bad in the long run, but you know, you're moving forward. You make a mistake, you keep going forward, and you hope to make more good decisions than bad. His idea with trades is to get guys who fit what they want. He'll tell you, we're not trying to win every trade. We're not trying to, you know, bamboozle the other team, make them look like idiots. We're trying to work with people, and find fits for them and fits for us. And I think he works well with people. Jerry is a people guy. He loves talking baseball. I think there's a lot of GMs that enjoy talking with him, and he's persistent. You know, he gets after somebody he's interested in, and he keeps going. He'll keep coming back to you and keep, you know, hey, you know, what are you looking at now? And a lot of times he'll say, hey, this is a guy we were looking at a year ago. We finally made the pieces line up. Chase DeYoung, the kid they just picked up in their last deal, that fit that case. You know, a guy they've been looking at for a while. They just liked him as a young strike-throwing pitcher, which kind of fits their mold, and a guy they think could fit in well down the road, and kind of that pool of young pitchers. So, yeah, Jerry, you can't make that many deals and be afraid to put your foot down and go for it sometimes. So pretty fun to watch, pretty fun to cover, and it'll be a lot of fun to see how it comes out in the wash.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm going to switch to a totally different gear when I mentioned humming before, because I'm going to switch over to music. And apparently Leonis Martin had quite a 29th birthday celebration. Okay, so this is, you know, just when you think you've seen everything in baseball, somebody surprises you. So tell us how the Mariners commemorated Leonis Martin's 29th birthday.
Well, if you like mariachi music, the Leonis's birthday was the day for you. And luckily, Leonis is a fun guy, a fun-loving guy, a big smile on his face all the time. Team meeting in the morning, you know, they're talking, talking baseball, doing their usual thing, and lo and behold, just start hearing some music. And of course, the media is not in this. This is players only, but you know, the players start hearing music coming in, and a four-man mariachi band walks in and starts playing "Happy Birthday," and Leonis gets up, and this is awesome, and thanks everyone. And little did he know, the mariachi band was going to follow him around for the entire two-hour workout. And literally on the field, you know, they were there when he was throwing, warming up. When he was taking fly balls in the outfield, they went out to the center field fence and stood behind him and played. You know, when he hit in the cage, they stood beside him. And he wore a sombrero throughout the entire workout, which he said was quite interesting, taking swings in the cage with a sombrero. But he enjoyed it. We went in to talk to him afterwards. Of course, you know, media loves this kind of stuff. Hey, what a fun story. We walk in to start talking to him. Next thing you know, the mariachi band is behind us playing music. You know, something you can't hear because the mariachi band is in your ear. So Leonis thankfully says, hey, you know, cool it for just a minute and let us talk to him. But it's fun. Leonis is a fun-loving guy and kind of speaks to this team and what Scott Service is trying to do, kind of keep things loose and easy in the clubhouse and in the spring, especially long season and having fun with guys. And that was certainly one I hadn't seen, and none of the ballplayers had said they'd ever seen a band on the field as well.
I'm sitting here cracking up because as you're talking, I'm watching the video on the Mariners website on MLB.com. As he's like fielding fly balls, he's like throwing the ball around. He's got the sombrero on his head. The mariachi band is in the background. So if anybody just takes 2 minutes to get on the website and check this out, because it's, oh my God, is that funny? I mean, I never, you know, sombreros, I just can't imagine how he was able to see anything.
Well, as his teammates, of course, were giving a hard time the whole day, Gerard Dyson, who was quite a character out beside him in the left field, said, hey, he's not having any trouble with sunballs today. He's got the big brim on. His coaches, and I think they were semi-serious when he was making throws in from the outfield, said, hey, these are the best throws he's made all year. The hat makes him keep his head up, and his throws are really online today, and it kind of straightened out his throwing motion. So it's funny. I can't imagine it was real comfortable for 2 hours to be wearing a big old sombrero, but he wore it. The other funny thing, Allison, you know, where did this thing come from? I went over and was talking to Kyle Seager afterwards, said, you know, who's behind all this? And he said, well, I think the skipper, but all I know is I was volunteered to pay for this. Kyle Seager was footing the bill for the band for a couple hours, and I think he was starting to look at his watch as they continued playing in the clubhouse for the 2.5 hours. So it was pretty funny. And that, again, speaks that Service has been that way. He kind of likes to get some of the well-paid veterans to help out with some of the fun things they do, bringing in a pool table or taking the guys out for sushi dinner after an inter-squad game of the winners. So Hisashi Iwakuma picked up the check on that. I think Felix and Cano helped put in a pool table. You know, different guys, different days seem to be reaching in their wallets a little bit and with a smile.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love how he had the band quiet down so we could talk to the media. You got to love that guy. Okay, Greg, thank you. Thank you so much. Hopefully we'll have as entertaining things to talk about next week, but enjoy the rest of your week. We'll catch up with you next time. Thank you.
You never know what you're going to see in spring training, that's for sure.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.